got me a job down at the local mill. Worked right up, not a mill is still. I can pay my bills. Repo man is at my door. They used to call us working class, but we're just not working anymore. Well, I had me a wife, kids, a car, and a boat. Things got bad, now the boat won't float. I don't like it. I'm too proud to be poor. They used to call us working class, but we're just not working anymore. We're not a working. We're not a working. We're just not working anymore.
Hello, folks. Welcome to the special two-hour edition of the World Labor Hour. Happy Labor Day to everybody, and you're listening to the World Labor Hour on listener-supported community radio station WFT, broadcasting from downtown Champaign, Illinois. Views and opinions expressed here are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of the station manager, board of directors, or of Prairie Air Incorporated. Just want to remind everybody, we're in pledge drive. This is not my favorite time of the year, but unfortunately, you know, we got to do these things to keep the station on the air. So, you know, if you can, please call in with a pledge, and any amount is appreciated to help keep us on the air. You're not going to hear the opinions and news stories on any corporate radio station. You're going to hear on the World Labor Hour or any of the other public affairs programs we have here at WEFT, nor you're going to hear the variety of different musical genres. Corporate radio doesn't play, for the most part, various musical genres like reggae music, hip-hop, alternative country, and things like that that just don't fit the corporate cookie-cutter mold. So you got to keep that in mind. This is here at WFT. This is just a very unique resource for downstate Illinois, and please help keep us on the air. So,
By the way, Dave.
Yes.
I would like to say that, let's talk like you're saying, things that you don't hear other places, and that's like the hour previous to this one with Paul Muth playing Richard Wolff.
Oh, indeed.
Richard Wolff is a great voice. And by the way, folks, he does have a regular podcast at Truth Dig.
Truth Dig, yes.
.org.
Okay.
And some other things Paul played, Mumia Abu-Jamal. I don't know who else, but he brings several voices every week in his sort of magazine, you know, readers, sort of listeners, left listeners digest.
And working people in general, because that's the thing.
Yeah.
Blackish, Black Agenda Report. Black Agenda Report is always one of Paul's favorites.
Good. Yeah. Hey, send us some. Buy us some more microphones.
Yeah. Good thing we weren't on television. That would have been a comedic moment there from
the viral on YouTube.
Yes. So anyway, Gus, so you got some underwriting announcements for us?
Yes. This hour program is brought to you in part by Central Illinois' Jobs with Justice, a coalition of unionist and community groups working for economic justice and workers' rights. Central Illinois Jobs with Justice holds regular meetings on the third Saturday of every month at 9:30 a.m. at Channing Murray Foundation, 1209 West Oregon, Urbana. For more information, visit www.centralillinoisjobswithjustice.org. Programming on the World Labor Hour is supported in part by listeners of WEFT and Decatur attorney Bill Faber, who believes that the mission of the law is the safety of the people. Bill Faber proudly supports the World Labor Hour. The Illinois World Labor Hour is supported in part by listeners of WEFT and by the AFL-CIO of Champaign County. The AFL-CIO represents the interests of more than 7,000 workers in Champaign County and more than 13 million workers nationwide. Recognizing that strong workers build strong communities, the AFL-CIO is proud to support community radio in East Central Illinois. The Graduate Employee Organization Union, GEO, at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign strives not only democratically represent graduate employees, but also to give solidarity and support to other unions, organizations, and workers engaged in the struggle for social justice both on and off campus. The GEO is proud to support the World Labor Hour on WEFT Community Radio.
Okay, thank you, Gus. And, you know, I just want to, we got a bunch of guests here in the studio today, and we're going to have State Representative Carol Ammons call in as well at some point between 11:30 and 12:30. So I guess I just want to start out by letting everybody know that, you know, Labor Day is a very important day, but you can't talk about Labor Day unless you also talk about May Day. Both May Day and Labor Day are workers' holidays. The difference is that May Day is celebrated everywhere in the world except some people celebrate in the United States, and Labor Day is only celebrated in Canada and the United States, and there's some interesting historical reasons for that. But both of them, I know there's a big debate on this. You know, a lot of people don't want anything to do with Labor Day. Some people don't want anything to do with May Day. And frankly, I think they're both very compatible because they both came out of the push for the 8-hour day. And that's what we got to keep in mind. So later, Labor Day was co-opted, but, you know, that's another story. It didn't start out as a co-opt. So anyway, I think maybe what we should do is one of our guests is in the studio now. I'd like to maybe start the show off talking with him because he has some other commitments, and I'm just so happy that he took some time to come down here. Ricky Baldwin, thank you so much for coming back to World Labor Hour.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, so it's been a while since you've been on the show, but could you just maybe tell the listeners who don't know you who you are, what you do, and that sort of thing? What makes you tick?
I don't know if I know what makes me tick, but I work for the Service Employees International Union Local 73, mm-hmm. which represents building service and food service workers at the university here in town. That's my main assignment. Mm-hmm. Some other things also. But I also work with you some on and Gus over there on in the Jobs with Justice here in town that he was mentioning, mm-hmm. which we keep going, and is a very good thing.
Yes, indeed. Now, you know, you're originally from Mississippi, right?
I am, yeah.
Yeah, and then you spent some time in Buffalo, New York, right?
I did, yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, about 7 years in Buffalo.
Now, that's where you kind of, got in the labor movement in Mississippi still, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. Actually, the first union I was a member of kind of gave me the impression of what unions were like. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily a accurate impression.
Okay.
I was part of the Mississippi Alliance of State Employees.
Okay.
Mississippi CWA Local 3570.
Which and that's a right-to-work state in Mississippi.
It is a right-to-work state, and we were public employees, and we did not have the right to collectively bargain.
Mm-hmm.
We had only recently gotten the right to form a union at all, legally,
okay.
under
mm-hmm.
the state's laws, because public employees have to have a specific state law in their state,
okay.
As you do in Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
Also. But we didn't have, since we didn't have a contract, we didn't have a lot of the things that other unions have. We pretty much had to focus on one thing. Our thing when I was there was a 3% raise. We wanted a 3% raise, and we didn't bargain. We just can I say, raised heck?
Okay. Totally,
I don't know if what I can say, but we just,
direct action.
We made trouble until we got the 3% raise. That's
okay.
what we did. And the governor tried to give us some jip, and we had a big rally down there, and he came out of his office, and he thought he would smooth talk us, and the members got up in his face, and he had to run back into his office. And that was on camera, so that was a big coup for us. And he tried to fire some prison guards for using a furlough day that he had enforced. He had insisted on they have a day off without pay, and they used it to come to our demonstration, and he fired them for that.
Oh, wow.
And we got them their jobs back.
Okay.
And, you know, it was a really good, you know, activist model.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of direct action.
Yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, there's I know there's a debate. Sometimes, you know, I don't know. I just wonder about it sometimes, but there's some people that say there's some advantages to having a situation like that where you're not kind of bound in by a contract or a, like in the construction space, we have these project labor agreements, you know. But still, I mean, it sounds like though, I mean, I would think that having a contract is better.
The project labor agreement being that we give up the right to strike
or walk off the job.
And everybody and all of the employers, contractors, whatever on the job have to be signed up to the unions.
Yeah, so it's
okay,
a
that's
it's
what a project labor agreement
you give,
is.
You give generally. Something and you get something, and But anyway, and so then you ended up in Baltimore, and I guess
Buffalo.
Buffalo. Buffalo, New York.
Both start with B.
Yeah. I'm sorry there, but anyway, I'm Buffalo, New York, and you know, I've just heard from you over the years. It sounded like a kind of an interesting time in your life there. There's a lot of going on. Sound like at the
it
time you were there.
It's a big union town.
Yeah,
it's a big union town, and you know, I worked for a union. I attended some classes there at night. They have a Buffalo Labor School where union activists can, you know, learn about collective bargaining, grievance processing, labor history, you know, all kinds of things. It's a wonderful thing. And they're night classes so that working people can go to them. I mean, you know, these days, you know, some operations are 24/7. Ours is at the university. So there is no particularly good time to have a class for some workers. But it was a good time there for most people. And so there were great classes.
Actually. So you were in the communication workers, CWA?
I was,
And who did you – were you a staffer at that point or a rank and file?
I was rank and file at first. I went to work for the Graduate Student Employees Union, which is a local of the CWA in that state.
Okay.
And I worked for them for a couple years. And then I worked for the Western New York Council on Occupational Safety and Health for a while. I worked for ACORN for a little while. I was an ACORN organizer.
Hey, by the way, ACORN still exists outside the United States.
Really? It doesn't exist at all in the United States anymore?
Well, there are some of the pieces are still around.
Okay.
Yeah, just not called ACORN.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I've heard an interview with people in England who are part of ACORN in Bristol, England.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. And so when did you come to Champaign, Urbana?
14 years ago.
Okay.
Something like that.
All right. Yeah, and I know, you know, you weren't a staffer for SEIU right away, but you were nevertheless. You seemed like you were everywhere. I mean, you.
For well, a while I did some volunteer work for a while. No, I stayed home with my kids for a few years, and then I did some volunteer stuff. You know, with the farm workers, the Coalition of Immokalee Workers, and you know.
And you brought them to town. I remember. That was probably 5-6 years ago. It was a huge rally on campus in front of Chipotle's, and
It was a couple of times. And the great thing about them is that you can actually meet them. You know, and you know a lot of the student sweatshop movements. I wasn't a student, but I worked with a lot of students on that campaign because a lot of students are interested in sweatshop type. Activism, right? Anti-sweatshop activism. And you never meet those people, you know, because they're in Indonesia or somewhere usually. But the great thing about the Immokalee workers is you can meet these guys.
Yeah.
They'll come to town on one of these bus tours that they do, and the guy can say, here's my bucket. I have to fill this with tomatoes so many times a day, and it weighs this much.
And you get 25 cents or whatever.
Yeah. It's really good stuff.
Yeah. And Immokalee's down in South Florida, and it's due east of Fort Myers, Cape Coral.
They actually went undercover and got people busted for slavery in Florida.
Yes. And I think that was in the Immokalee area.
Yeah, they were doing things like hiring, or not hiring, but some picking up like crack addicts, various drug addicts, and just sort of keeping them, giving them food and drugs.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Keeping them locked in at night and stuff like that. Yeah, they ran over a guy with a truck. I mean, it's dangerous. Dangerous work, you know. People got pistol whipped and stuff.
Wow.
Very dangerous work.
Yeah, we got to do a story on that again sometimes. I mean, that happened several years ago, but I think it's one that needs to be, that story needs to be told now.
They've got a radio station.
That's right, don't they? Do. Yeah. Okay.
Down there.
Well, we need to get one of them to call in maybe sometime.
I mean, it's not just in Florida. Of course, it's, you know, the whole southeast there, Alabama and up into the Carolinas. The people that they work with, because they're not the same kind of member organization that some of the unions are accustomed to, but they move with the crops. Mm-hmm. You know, wherever the work is, that's where they go.
Okay.
And so they're mainly tomato workers because that's the biggest. But melons, citrus, all that kind of stuff. Grapefruit, you wouldn't think. That's actually nasty work.
Is it?
Yeah. Oh, they have to go up on ladders. There are big thorns on the trees. They hold them at gunpoint. And they say it so they won't damage the trees, but it's, you know, so they can't run away.
Oh my gosh.
It's crazy stuff.
Yeah,
it's
crazy
stuff. Yeah.
So, and
this is in the United States in the 21st century.
Yes, indeed. And then you were a founding member of Jobs with Justice here, Central Illinois.
True,
Jobs with Justice.
Yeah.
That was back 10, 12 years ago?
Oh, 06. Oh,
06, okay.
Yeah.
9 years ago, okay.
When we actually got the charter. I mean, we were active before that with that building trades picket at the Hilton. And there was
the Paris Hilton Hotel. Yeah,
yeah, that's right. And there was a Walmart picket. I guess so.
Yeah, 10 years so next year.
That's
coming
a good
up
point.
Here in
that's
January.
A good point.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, Ricky, listen. I really want to thank you for stopping by. Any last words? Could you maybe just maybe let the listeners know kind of what Jobs with Justice does? It's a nationwide organization.
Sure.
We got three chapters in Illinois: Champaign, Urbana, Chicago, and North. It's actually called Northern Illinois Jobs with Justice, which is kind of a northern and western suburbs of Chicago.
Right. Well, it's a good question because a lot of people don't realize that they're all local coalitions.
Mm-hmm.
Each place that there is a chapter, it's not just a bunch of people who believe in Jobs with Justice, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually a coalition of unions and community groups in that area to get a charter.
And a lot of times churches and synagogues or whatever.
You have to have so many unions and so many groups that are not unions, you know, so like the CU Immigration Forum, the Friends Society.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's quite a few community groups that are part of it, and then quite a few unions.
Mm-hmm.
And, the way individual people can participate is they sign up to be called, you know, when there's an event to show up to. We show up when there's a picket line, you know, something like that.
In the last, I remember there's been several interesting campaigns with Jobs with Justice here locally over the years, and the last one was a couple years ago out at the Guardian West Flexing Gate.
That's the last really big one.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That was just, I mean, usually we're in a supportive role, but we do things occasionally. The Walmart stuff's mainly. That's been mainly Jobs with Justice doing that.
Mm-hmm.
But, and the Fight for 15 really in town here. I'll just say for the listeners who may not know, the fast food workers who are trying to get $15 an hour in a union, in town here, that's mainly been a Jobs with Justice effort too. It's economic justice and worker rights, whatever that means. It can mean a lot of different things. It can be defined really broadly, you know, to include some immigration rights. And, you know, we were talking with how we can work with the Black Lives Matter movement recently. And I think that's going to be important for us, too.
But, yeah, I tell you, and there's been some fun rallies over the years, both the Fight for 15 in front of McDonald's down on Neil and Kirby, and also the Walmart out in Urbana. And we always pick the one on Urbana because it's a little easier logistically. But last time we were there a couple years ago, Walmart security came out and told us we couldn't be on a public sidewalk, that they owned the sidewalk.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Don't believe everything you
hear. One of our members One of the, in fact, Jim Iman, who calls into the show regularly, was there with me when they came out and said that. Yeah. And Jim goes, "Are you going to call the police? Oh, please do. Please do. That would make our day." And they, these guys, these two security, a man and a woman, they look on their face like they've never experienced this sort of thing before.
No, we run into that at the university a lot, just with SEIU. Actually, we'll show up for a picket or for leafleting or something. Somebody from the building doesn't like it. They come out. You have to leave. No, we don't. We're going to call the police. Please.
Yeah.
Please call them. We'd like to talk to them again.
Yeah. You
know, they come out and tell us, well, you're on the sidewalk. You're not blocking it. So, you know, go about your business.
Yeah. Well, Ricky, thank you so much for stepping in.
Briefly,
I've been wanting to get you back on the show for a while. Yeah. And happy Labor Day to you. And you're going to be out to the parade on Monday?
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. It's a good thing. Our members are going to be there offering, and we're going to bring some T-shirts for them anyway.
Okay. And I want to, can you turn this way a little bit? I want to read okay. Since we're not on television, Ricky's wearing a great shirt. I told him he needs to wear it on Labor Day in the parade. It says that they only call it class warfare when we fight back. And that's just great. Thanks.
A little irony there.
Yeah, a little irony.
Yeah.
All right, well, I appreciate it.
You bet. Thank you so much,
Ricky. Sorry, I have to run.
That's okay. Well, I just appreciate you stopping in for a little bit. And I'm sure we'll be seeing each other here real soon. So take care. You're listening to World Labor Hour. We're going to take a quick music break, and we'll be right back.
I was traveling through Illinois when I was invited to stop and sing at a memorial there in the little town of Mount Olive. Now, who of note in American history is buried in the cemetery in Mount Olive, Illinois? I'll give you a hint. It was a woman. It was the Union Miners Cemetery. Do you have it yet? Mary Harris. Mary Harris Jones. Mother Jones. It's hard for the mind to encompass a life that embraced the presidencies between Andrew Jackson and Herbert Hoover. Why, when Mother Jones was a little girl, there were people still alive who remembered the Revolutionary War. And she died on the eve of the New Deal. Her millinery shop burned down in the Chicago fire, and she had heard Abraham Lincoln speak in person. Mostly, though, Mother Jones was the miner's friend. Down in Kentucky, Tennessee, West Virginia. Well, the men would be organizing the underground workers, the miners. Mother Jones had already organized their wives and led them over the snow-covered game trails down into the Hollis, where, armed with mops and brooms, they drove the scabs out of the coal pits. Now, Mother Jones wasn't an organizer, she was an agitator, which meant often enough she was hated as much by the organizers as by the bosses. One time, Mother Jones was out in Colorado at the great Ludlow strike. Now, that was a strike to enforce the 8-hour day, which the state of Colorado had made a law, but they couldn't enforce it because Rockefeller owned the militia. Now, the governor promised not to send the militia into the coal fields, but he lied.
Okay, we're back. You're listening to the World Labor Hour on List Supported Community Station WFT. That was Utah Phillips, and the name of the song was The Most Dangerous Woman, a song about Mother Jones, who spent a lot of time here in Illinois, mainly in southern Illinois, in the coal fields and stuff. And that name came, I guess, when she led a march of several thousand child workers, both some as young as 9 years old, primarily boys who worked in the mines and girls who worked in textile mills. The average life expectancy of a girl that worked in a textile mill was about 23 years old, if they started when they were like 9 or 10 years old, because of all the fibers and everything. So anyway, she led a march in Washington, D.C., right to the White House when Teddy Roosevelt was president, and that's where the name Most Dangerous Woman in America came from. So I had to play that one for Labor Day, for sure. But okay, real quick here, we got another guest here in the studio, but first, I want Bob's going to give us a news story about something that happened here in Springfield just a few days ago.
Yeah, this was on Wednesday. The Democratic-controlled Illinois House failed to override Governor Rauner's veto of a union-backed bill that could have sent labor talks to binding arbitration. This story out of the State Journal Register says Governor Bruce Rauner won a major victory Wednesday. The override effort got 68 votes. They needed 71 to override the veto. So it says no Republicans broke ranks to support the override effort. Three Democrats, Representative Scott Drury of Highwood, was the only Democrat to vote against the override. Representative Jack Franks of Marengo voted present, and Representative Ken Duncan of Chicago was the only Democrat not to attend Wednesday's session. House Speaker Michael Madigan had twice predicted the House would have the votes to override Rauner's veto. He claims had Duncan been there, there would have been 71. He should have been there voting on labor peace. Rauner said he vetoed Senate Bill 1229 because it would leave the outcome of labor negotiations in the hands of an arbitrator who does not have to answer to voters. His administration has contended that the AFSCME workers demanding a wage and benefit package would have cost the state $2 billion. AFSCME represents about 38,000 state workers, and they've disputed that contention. The Illinois AFL-CIO issued a statement blaming the defeat on an intense barrage of false claims about the fair arbitration bill by the Rauner administration, naked threats of political retaliation by the Republican leadership, and paid attacks by right-wing super PACs. The governor's ferocious and false attacks on this moderate and responsible bill clearly shows he wants conflict, not compromise. That comes from Union President Michael Kerrigan. He said the governor's assault on this bill may have won the day, but it poisoned the well for legislators of both parties who want to work together responsibly to solve problems and serve the people of Illinois. So Rauner claims victory. Sad that those three Democrats either weren't there, voted present, or voted against it.
Actually. Yeah, one no-show, one voting present, and one actually voting against the override. Yes, and supposedly Mike Madigan's, in the past, he seems like he's always gotten all the Democratic House members to line up for a vote. I don't know. Rauner has threatened. We got Dave Beck, who's a staff member for AFSCME, coming into the program here a little bit, and we'll talk to him about this some more. But Rauner has stated that he has argued that enacting a budget would require stripping some rights from workers to collectively bargain, and his administration has contacted retirees about possible service as strike breakers, in other words, scabs, and has begun preparations for mobilizing the National Guard. So
I want to mention something, man.
Yeah.
I heard this story 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And I heard it on WCPT mm-hmm. in Chicago. And I would like to remind people, a lot of people like to listen to shows like this.
Yeah.
But they don't care about listening to some music show.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's other things you can listen to. And WCPT is something that you can stream. And I heard this on one of their afternoon shows where they have a local host mm-hmm. after Tom Hartman. The guy, I can't remember his name now. Wayne Beeson.
Mm-hmm.
But he talked about this story, and he talks about a lot of state stuff. I just want to make listeners aware of that.
Okay. Well, you know what? Dave Beck just came into the studio here, so I think this might be a good time to talk about this. Dave, we just, I don't know if you heard, but we just read a story about the override of the governor's veto. Governor Rauner's veto failed because of three Democrats, one voting against the override, one not showing up, and one just showing up and voting present. I know this has been a real difficult time for AFSCME, hasn't it, as far as this contract negotiations with the governor?
Oh, it's definitely been a struggle.
Yeah.
And this vote was disappointing, but on one side, obviously, we wanted the override to go through. But when you think about it, we had 68 representatives on our side
mm-hmm.
Who were really, in some cases, the one representative had been sick at home for a long, long time. She came in for the vote and then had to go to the hospital and then came back from the hospital mm-hmm. to actually make her vote. And a couple of others were also very ill, one recovering from cancer. And it's amazing, the kind of support that we got.
Yeah. So there's no provision in the Illinois House or Senate for when an elected official is, ill with cancer, let's say, to be able to cast some kind of absentee vote of any kind?
No.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
They have to be actually present there in the chambers.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So, it seems here that Rauner has basically, made it, he stated, I think, shortly after he got elected that he was hoping that, the AFSCME workers and other state workers would go on strike because then he was, basically he was like saying, make my day kind of thing. And I didn't know that he's actually trying to recruit retirees to be scabs and has made preparations with the Illinois National Guard. I mean, I don't know if this is a bluff or not, but I can you imagine if this would happen? I mean, it would be chaos everywhere, you know?
Oh, it would be complete chaos. Mm-hmm. And lots of people harmed, and the people who would be harmed are the people who can ill afford to be harmed.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, he doesn't care.
Yeah, yeah.
The governor doesn't care about those kind of folks. He only cares about the 1%, and the 1%, you know, I think at some point they're going to be harmed by this as well, and that would be the point where he might actually, you know, change his
mm-hmm.
ways.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's going to be a long time before a lot of the 1% people are harmed by not getting their public services.
Sure,
yeah,
sure.
You know. Now, so tell me what AFSCME workers do. I mean, say if there was a strike, I mean, what would happen? I mean, what things would cease to function?
Wow, that would take a.
I mean, like for instance, driver's license.
Well, we don't represent the driver's license.
Okay.
That's SEIU.
Okay.
I assume they're also negotiating, though.
Mm-hmm. Just who would your bargaining unit
be? So our bargaining unit, Department of Human Services. Mm-hmm. You know, think about it: Link Card, WIC. You know, all kinds of services for families.
Mm-hmm.
Employment security, so unemployment insurance. Children and family services. So, I mean, protecting the kids in our community who are being harmed by, you know, their families or neighbors or whatever. You know, who's going to take care of them?
Mm-hmm.
Natural resources. We have folks in Department of Transportation, you know, you name it, all over the state. I mean, literally all over the state. The local here in town that's based here in town is actually covers like six counties, and there are, you know, state workers in every county
mm-hmm.
doing you know, important work.
Now, the University of Illinois workers who are in AFSCME unions, it's a different bargaining unit?
Yes, we have two different bargaining units mm-hmm. at the university, and for the most part, they would not be affected by these mm-hmm. negotiations, except for one very important thing, and this actually extends to every employee of the university, and that's health insurance.
Mm-hmm.
The state health insurance, which goes even the president of the university has the state health insurance plan. That plan is negotiated by AFSCME with the governor,
mm-hmm.
and that's part of these negotiations. And you know, I'll tell you what, his first proposal, and we don't like to negotiate, obviously, in the media, but his first proposal was so ridiculous. It would increase everyone's health insurance cost by about 500%. That was his starting position for health insurance.
Yes, and if I remember...
Oh, that's just... sorry.
It's okay.
Is there sort of pattern bargaining here? Let's say if AFSCME would lose some things, then... It would make it easier for them to take them away from SEIU at some point or anything.
Oh,
like
sure.
That.
I mean, I imagine.
You know, sort of like in the auto industry.
Yeah, precedent,
You set a pattern with Ford and then basically Chrysler and GM.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I think someone mentioned earlier that we represent, 30-something thousand folks, and that's by far the largest. I mean, there's only, you know, a few other thousand that are represented, I think. And the health insurance is the glaring example. No one else negotiates health insurance. We negotiate the mm-hmm. health insurance, but sure. And the governor actually is trying to use this idea of pattern bargaining because he keeps throwing out this idea that, you know, he's negotiated with the Teamsters, which represent maybe a few thousand workers, state workers. And they recently agreed to a four-year complete hiring or complete wage freeze and a number of other givebacks. And so he's saying, well, these folks agreed to it, so the 37,000 members of AFSCME should agree to it, too.
Okay, I think and most of the Teamsters, I believe, that work for the state of Illinois are largely in the Department of Transportation, mm-hmm. and not so much as truck drivers, but as engineers. A lot of people I work with on road work, engineers that are Teamsters or represented by the Teamsters.
I see. Okay.
And so you see right there, the GEO, the engineering department, was one of their hardest departments to organize.
Yeah.
So
I guess what I'm wondering about is it's going to be interesting to see where all this is heading. I mean, it's going to be – I mean, this can't go on forever. There's going to be – I'm hoping that AFSCME doesn't back down this because, wow, I know this is out of your hands, of course. But, you're kind of caught in the middle here. I guess – I don't know what to say other than this – is that there's got something's going to have to give here, and I think in some ways I'm kind of hoping that I see the negatives and the positives. I mean, in some ways I'm hoping this comes to an impasse and AFSCME does go on strike and call Rauner's bluff, because I think it is a bluff, frankly.
Oh, please don't say that. My wife will kill me.
Okay. But I'm just saying in the big picture, and of course I understand. I don't say that lightly, because we know that, sure, you know, going on strike. I mean, I grew up in a union family. I remember my father was involved in a 6-week strike, and wow, I mean, it's like all of a sudden your life is like going down to the bare minimum. I mean, you know, no luxuries, you know, no toys for the kids. You know, you're eating hot dogs and beans, and because you don't know when it's gonna, you know, end. You know.
Oh sure, we're already telling our.
When we're lucky,
we're already. You know, we've been telling our members. You know, you got to start preparing for the possibility. You know, don't buy that car. You know, if you can avoid an expense, you know, a vacation, stay at home. You know, save up as much as you can. We hate to do that.
I mean, yeah.
You know, we've been negotiating with every governor, Republican, Democrat, whatever, since the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And never, you know, it's never come to this. And we hope it doesn't have to go farther. You know, we're obviously going to keep negotiating. We have a contract extension through the end of September. And if we need it, hopefully we'll get another contract extension. But with this guy in office, you know, who knows?
Yeah.
I've had a contention lately that I think that the public employee unions in Illinois really need to start leaning on Washington, D.C., because Springfield is going to continuously be, we have no money, your pensions are already destroying us, so on and so forth. And I really think that Illinois' public employees and the employees of many other states, localities, no matter, think that we have the right to demand a bailout, just like the banks get bailed out, mm-hmm, or insurance companies get bailed out. Public employees are too big to fail.
Yeah, that's true. And there's other states up besides Illinois that are in the same situation.
I don't understand why.
And Puerto Rico.
I really think that all these unions really need to get together and be hitting Washington harder, because a part of the problem is that Washington gave up progressive taxation decades ago.
And federal revenue sharing, yeah.
Do you remember when we started hearing all about budget woes everywhere? In the 1980s.
Yep.
Before the 1980s, we could go to the moon and fight a war.
Yeah, indeed. Multiple wars, yeah. Well, listen, Dave, we're going to definitely keep in touch with you. You happen to also be the vice president of the Champaign County AFL-CIO and the political director.
Yes.
Job I had back in the late 90s. you know, it's so you got a little insight on some of the local players in politics and stuff. And I don't really want to go into that today,
right,
and everything. But we got to get you back sometime here. And I'm hoping you'll be coming back with some good news. But sometime I'd like to get you back and talk a little bit about maybe some of the, I mean, as much as you want to, as far as revealing names or whatever, but it'd be good to just kind of get a little a feel about how this sort of thing, the dynamics of it, as far as you know, a workers' representative, what kind of the process of you know, dealing with candidates and elected officials, you know, because a lot of people out there don't want to get involved in politics, and there's that, what's that old saying, if you don't do politics, politics will do you, or
yeah, you're one. Not interested in politics, it's real interested in you. And I tell you, there's big danger here. Now, let's say something happens and unemployment checks don't go out.
Oh, yeah.
You will have a bunch of building trades workers. Those damn AFSCME people.
Well,
I'm serious. They're like,
let's
that.
Hope that they're the small trades. Minority, you know.
No, well, actually, I think we have a really good relationship around, you know, here with the building trades.
No,
I mean,
I'm talking rank and file. Well. There will be people. I mean, I've worked with these people. There will be people that I work with who would be like that.
Oh, sure, Bill, I know. I worked in the trades for 30 years. But there's also, you know, the one thing I found was that for every one person like that, there's at least another three or four that don't have that same attitude.
Here's what I'm saying, man. It's mm-hmm. the problem with the building trades, and this I may be because I'm a laborer.
Yeah.
And laborers don't have the traditions of other trades. We're kind of a sort of a weird amalgamation, almost an industrial union
mm-hmm.
in some aspects. And I'm going to tell you right now, there's like, there's just no culture there.
You mean
you
union
know,
culture?
Solidarity.
There used to be.
You know, just,
there used to be. I mean, man, you guys were a legend at one time here in
this
town.
Well, that was based on
gangster unionism. Yeah, yeah, but it, you know what? It was direct action. It got
there was a lot of direct action going on.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, I can't go on the air talking about some of these stories because there was probably there's still people alive and there was some illegal stuff done. But boy, I'll tell you what, I know people have seen it firsthand.
But basically, all the laborers do is say, okay, go vote for Democrats. Well, that's about all the education you get as a laborer.
Well, we talked about this before, and I think you're absolutely right, because I've seen the same phenomenon in building trades over the last 30 years, because when I first got in the late 70s, in our first year apprenticeship class, we learned all about the history of the Carpenters Union, what unionism means, the whole nine yards. It was like probably the first whole week of our six-week pre-apprenticeship training.
Oh, by the way, speaking of history and the Laborers Union, coming on September 17th from 5 p.m. till 7 p.m., there will be some kind of presentations on local labor history at Local 703.
Yes.
In the evening. And that was brought, I believe, the Ammons were very keen.
Yes, and Stephanie Sewell, who's working, who used to be president of GEO and is now working for the Illinois Labor History Society, or the organizers on this. And I'm going to have some more information on that for you. But Dave, before you leave, you happen to be one of the main organizers for the Labor Day Parade this Monday. Did you want to just let everybody know kind of some details?
Yeah, real quick, you know, the parade starts at 10 a.m. From Lincoln Square Mall, goes down Broadway in Urbana to Washington, down Washington to Learman, right at Brookings Center, Prairie Park. Then right after that, the picnic starts, usually about 11 o'clock. The picnic starts in Prairie Park. Free food, beverages, music, activities for kids. There's a softball tournament for locals. All kinds of fun, and we hope, you know, it's open to the entire community. Anyone can come. It's our chance to not only just celebrate labor, but also to try to connect with the community and you know, make the connections that we need down the road. That'll make our movement stronger.
Okay, so make sure if you want to participate in the parade, be at Lincoln Square before 10 a.m. And if you're not part of a local union organization that has a presence in the parade, Jobs with Justice, it's position number 41 in the parade, is welcoming anybody that'd like to march with them. So keep that in mind. Dave, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy weekend to come. I know you got family and all that, but we just thought since it's a Labor Day program special that we just had to get some local labor people on here and talk a little about what's going on. And hey, good luck with this negotiation. You guys are probably going to be history in the making one way or another. It's it might get really bad, a lot worse before it gets better, but man, I'll tell you, you know, this stuff with Rauner and the other things that have been happening in this country over the last couple decades, we're pushing the standards of working people further and further down. It's got to stop somewhere, and just hoping you guys can somehow hold the line on that, at least.
Well, yeah. I hope this generates some class consciousness.
Oh, okay.
You know, where the class war is like our previous guest T-shirt.
Yes, indeed.
You know, it's just when we fight back, it's class war.
Yeah, right. Okay, Dave, thank you so much. Okay, you're listening to the World Labor Hour on the Spur Community Radio Station, WFT in Champaign. And we're going to take a quick music break, and we'll be right back.
It's all about secrecy. Ain't nothing but PPP. The corporations love you, but we're the 99%, and we'll show you what we can do. Take it, baby, to the street. Break it, baby, out of control. Make it, baby, go away. Secrecy, baby, ooh, ooh. TPP, baby, love, you and me, baby. Ha! We will stop the TPP.
Okay, we're back, and that was TPP, version of an old Motown song with the music, but about the Trans-Pacific Partnership, about how it's bad for all of us working people. And Gus, there's been some interesting stuff happening in Chicago. Would you like to share with the listeners?
Yeah, the Chicago public school system right now has been going through a major struggle against the powers that be in the city and state to not only revitalize a lot of the school systems, but also to save a lot of the jobs in the system. What's actually been going on is there's been a two-week-old hunger strike in the Chicago public school system by the workers there. So to quote somebody that actually is a part of it, and the group is called the Coalition to Revitalize Diet School, if I'm pronouncing it wrong.
Diet.
So to quote one of the people, "We are tired of schools that have been sabotaged from the beginning and labeled as failing, and our children being shipped around from school to school as if they don't matter, while on the other side of town, children have Mandarin Chinese. They have all the opportunities they need, while our children have to go to schools where they have to take art and physical education as online classes." So
this Excuse me, physical education is an online class?
It's an online class, yeah. So you're pretty much playing chess and whatever those other, whatever the games you play on computer.
Maybe they use that, what's that one game where you do the, go through the motions?
Oh, Wii. Yeah, Nintendo Wii. So yeah, so this coalition, they're demanding that the city accept community members' proposal to transform Diet, the only public open admissions high school left in the historic black neighborhood, and reopen it as an open enrollment global leadership and green technology academy run by the Chicago Public Schools. So this school is among dozens of schools in poor, predominantly black neighborhoods that Chicago's unelected Board of Education has starved for resources for years. In 2012, this school was slated to be phased out and closed. A year later, the board voted to close 49 elementary schools, again, all in predominantly black and brown neighborhoods. Meanwhile, the city has sold off public education to the highest bidder, either with the construction of charter schools, which we talked about last week in our big 10th anniversary Katrina show, or privatized operated public schools in quotation marks, like the ones Chicago public school system put in what they call turnaround mode, which means they fired the entire staff and handed the management over to a private company called the Academy for Urban School Leadership, where discipline and rigorous test preparation are what they call the priority over critical thinking and scholarship, which goes back into this whole idea of what are we really creating in this public school education. And one of my favorite speeches that I've heard recently from H. Rap Brown, who used to be with the Black Panthers, is this idea of education versus training. Mm-hmm. That what we're getting in American school systems is a training to be button pushers and laborers at the bottom of the means of production, instead of actually education, which is critical thinking and real scholarship. Mm-hmm. So the same thing that H. Rap Brown was talking about in 1969 is the same thing Chicago public school system is fighting for today.
Yes. Yeah, indeed. In fact, you know, we could do a whole program on the whole charter school movement, the attempts to privatize American public education. It's a potentially multi-billion dollar industry for corporations. That's why you got people like the Walton family, the owners of Walmart, and Bill Gates and these other big capitalists that are out there pushing so hard for privatization and charter schools, and making these propaganda films like Waiting for Superman and I Won't Back Down, you know.
Well, and remember too, when they actually crunched the numbers, the data showed that public school students were doing better at critically thinking and scholarship, mm-hmm. and the charter school students were doing much worse than the public school students. So, of course, that's a problem because, again, you're starting to lose that training aspect of American education. And that's why they're pushing these charter schools, because they have a certain type of worker that they're trying to create in this system.
Yeah, a dumbed down worker.
Exactly.
I mean, I think that the ruling class in this country is really frightened of a well-educated working class, you know, that has very good critical thinking skills, you know.
And that's the historical precedent of this country since public schools were even conceived.
Yes.
They always feared that critical thinking component.
Yes, indeed. Okay, our next guest here is David Green. David, welcome back to the World Labor Hour.
Thanks, Dave.
Okay, so I wanted to have you come in today. You're an employee at the University of Illinois, is that correct?
Yes, I am.
And you're a member of IEA?
Academic Professionals
Association. Yeah, and it's organized under the Illinois Education Association, IEA. Okay.
Right, exactly.
Okay, so I thought I'd have you in because you're kind of a fixture in the community. You're very much involved in quite a few various local organizations, and you've run for public office, and you write some excellent letters to the News Gazette, too. I always get a kick out of them. I mean, you talk about going for, the juggler or whatever in a very comedic way at times. It's really great. So, so what would you like to talk about today?
I mainly try to be truthful.
Well, I guess the truth hurts sometimes.
Sometimes it helps if you're a little bit humorous while you're being truthful. But I try not to. I also try not to be personal. But that gets kind of hard with these 1% kind of people.
Yes,
they kind of get personal. So sometimes I think you have to get a little bit personal back. But in any event, David, as you know, and as mainly it's your fault that there's been a local Green Party chapter organized in the last few months in Urbana-Champaign and in Champaign County, and hopefully extending out into some of the counties around here. And I thought it would be worth at least broadening the point of view beyond labor unions, which are obviously integral to a working class party, to talk about what it would mean to have a genuine workers' labor party in this country, which we really haven't had. It's historically complicated why we haven't had that, why perhaps other countries have had that and we haven't. It's perhaps historically complicated why the Green Party has been sort of partly by default, I think, been cast in the role of being kind of a leftist labor worker party, and what that might mean and where we might go with that. Because, frankly, that's the only reason I would be involved with the Green Party, is if I didn't think of it unless I thought of it as a workers' labor, broadly working class laborers, and a party which ultimately questions the role of the workers in this two major party system, which doesn't represent them, which historically hasn't represented them, and continues to give them extremely bad choices. Bill, you want to say something, I think.
Well, again, too bad we're not on television, right?
Well, a lot of people might characterize or have characterized the Green Party as somewhat a reform bourgeois party.
And other people have characterized it as strictly an environmentalist party, and I don't think either two are correct. Do you, David? Or?
Well, no, I think we're trying to move away from that. I mean, that's what I would want to do.
Well, yeah, what I'm saying, I'm talking about people who are more explicitly, say, socialist. Well, we have to have a socialist revolution.
Well,
address that.
Well,
how the Green
Oh boy.
Well, I think that we have to move the Green Party. I mean, for me to maintain involvement in the Green Party and to feel like my heart is in it, I feel like we have to be very blunt about the aspects of it which are definitely part of a socialist program, and that's why we and me have written a platform which I think reflects some of those values, and I think hopefully you'll be seeing that platform in the public eye later on this fall. But these are things I think, because of these peculiar historical circumstances of not really having a working class party in this country, and the way history has evolved in terms of the environmental movement now becoming central in relation to global warming, to how do we have a program that actually can can address global warming, well, you have to have a reform of the whole productive system. You have to have worker control of that system and a much more active government in control, a much more democratically accountable government in control of that system. So the environmental movement has come to the labor movement, broadly speaking, and I think the Green Party has to capitalize on that as we move forward.
Yeah, well, as listeners probably would know, that I'm really disgusted with the unions and not having anything at all to do with environmentalism for the most part, and the global warming, and still thinking that we need economic growth. All right, and something that I find interesting, and with the Green Party's 10 values, yeah, is number 6, community-based economics. Mm-hmm. Where they're talking about redesign our work structures to encourage employee ownership and workplace democracy. Well, that sounds kind of socialistic to me. Develop new economic activities and institutions that will allow us to use our new technologies in ways that are humane, freeing, ecological, and accountable and responsive to communities. Establish some form of basic economic security open to all. Move beyond the narrow, quote, job ethic to new definitions of, quotes, work, jobs, and income that reflect the changing economy. Restructure our patterns of income distribution to reflect the wealth created by those outside the formal model. Anyway, so looking right here, this is looking pretty socialistic, yeah, and somewhat revolutionary.
Yeah, I think I've taken the 10 key values, yeah, of the Green Party, and I've added sort of bullet points that I thought would emphasize some of the working class aspects of that, which you just have in some ways also. And I think we need to be more explicit about moving towards socialist values, and we'll debate as we move forward about how we use the S word. I think we should use it shamelessly, because I think people are ready to hear it. Other people think that people are put off by the word socialism, but as long as we define what we mean by that, then I think
that's the key.
That's the basis.
Yeah, that's the key. The definition.
Don't let them define it.
Yeah,
very, very much so. I prefer the C word, to be honest, but just going into this idea of,
and Bill prefers the A word, and I guess I'm a syndicalist, so I fit everywhere almost, you know, or nowhere, whoever you want to look at it.
Well, I mean, but number 6, we're talking about the workers' ownership and management. Yeah, that is syndicalism.
Indeed. Yeah. These labels, you know, different political movements historically, I mean, they all overlap. And I think the important thing is to find the commonalities and work on that. You know, Gus, what do you think?
So the question then would be methodology.
Yes.
Are we talking specifically about reform? Or versus restructuring / revolution.
Reform. Remember, revolution is just turning over. It's exactly. Not blowing, yeah, things up.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. A revolution could be nonviolent or violent.
That's another conversation for another time.
Sure.
But I was going to say, it's not necessarily blowing things up.
Yeah.
It's not. But yeah,
the R word.
But just the total restructuring of the system, because a lot of your points are they're much in the vein of restructure. Mm-hmm. So, as a political party within the U.S. system, trying to go into against a juggernaut like the Republicans and Democrats, who own a lot of the means of production and the propaganda, how do you see yourself restructuring and trying to basically fight in that battle with those two juggernauts in said system?
Well, there's lots of ways of going about that. And you can call them reform if you want, but there's reform, and then there's reform. There's fundamental reform. And one of the most fundamental reform deals with the radical accumulation of wealth by the 1%, the 0.1%, the 0.01%. So when you look at if you do a back of the envelope calculation of privately owned wealth, what you have, say, in this state is probably 1% of the people owning $1 trillion, $1,000 billion, okay? And what do they pay in state and local taxes on that? They probably pay 6 or 7%, whereas a poor family or a working class family when you add up all their taxes, and this has been done, probably pays 14%. So if you look at that system and you reform the regressive nature of the state and local tax system, and you add on to that what the state Green Party is calling the LaSalle tax, which is actually has been proposed by a Democrat in the state legislature, you're talking about making available tens of billions of dollars. Think of that $1,000 billion of that $1,000 billion owned by the 1%, and we're struggling to get $3 or $4 billion.